Guys, welcome to another episode of The Pulse. You've been watching, you know what we do. People who have cool stories, they're doing cool things, and we get a chance to just kind of sit down and talk to the people that you and I have always wanted to share some time with. And that continues today. Now, our guest today, Scott Patterson, kind of cult following from his time on Gilmore Girls. Also, professional baseball player for a minute, doing my research, did that. On tour with the band, like multi-talented. You've done a lot of stuff. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bill. How you doing? Hello, Philadelphia.
I'm doing really well. I appreciate you taking some time out of your schedule. I feel like when you've done that much stuff, and I didn't even mention you're to Philly, you're a local guy.
Yeah, I was born there, and we spent, I don't know, I think about a year there before my parents moved everybody over to South Jersey. So I grew up in Haddonfield, but, you know, in the early 70s when the Flyers were winning Stanley Cups every year, we would skip school and hit the speed line and come to Philadelphia and celebrate. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like Haddonfield counts. I feel like people in Haddonfield are still, if they're traveling or something and somebody asks you where you're from, they still say Philly.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, I was born there, so I can claim it.
All right. Yeah. Fair enough.
I can claim it.
How did this, you're talking about Haddonfield, it sounds like baseball was the dream, but let's walk back a little bit. How'd you get started into this?
Into
just the career path.
Baseball? The career path? Yeah, I mean, so I had a sort of a circuitous route, as they say, to professional baseball. I left my high school team as a junior, massive dispute with the coach. So I walked away from that and didn't play my junior and senior year. But my freshman year at Rutgers, I wasn't playing baseball. And then I got back into it and I went to a JC in Orlando, got in shape, got drafted, didn't sign. Went to Rod Dato from USC, said, come on out, we'll give you a scholarship, but I had to get an AA degree. So before I even got my AA degree, I signed with the Braves because they drafted me. That was the third time I was drafted in a year, two January drafts and a June draft. So I signed with the Braves, and, you know, that started a seven-year journey that you know, did not culminate in me being a first ballot Hall of Famer, to say the least.
Well, not in that, maybe in broadcast.
Well, yeah, I mean, I have a podcast, but I don't know that we're winning any awards for that. It's just a nice thing to do for the fans, and we enjoy it so much. And iHeart's a great partner. You know, the thing I got out of professional baseball is it taught me how to be a professional. I didn't know before, you know, loving something and is not enough. You have to work at it. And so that was the great lesson I took from that experience. And it pretty much guaranteed my success in the acting game. Because I crossed over into the acting game and I just outworked everybody. So
I feel like it's a story that we hear. I mean, obviously, this is a unique story for somebody who didn't play junior, senior year and then freshman year to still get drafted and drafted in the first round. That's impressive. That aside, I think we hear about people and sports and the determination and the commitment kind of preparing you for life. And you do feel like that had that impact on you.
Yes, it's you know, consistency is the norm. It's what's expected of you. If you can't be consistently solid, you don't have to be great every outing, right? I was a starting pitcher, so I pitched every fifth day. But you need to show some consistency throughout the season, and you're going to have your ups and downs, sure. But you know, you really need to deliver something most of the time. You know, if you have 25 starts that year, you know, you need to show up and keep your team in the game, you know, 18, 19, 20 of those starts. You know, it can't be a 50-50 situation. You really need to, and that builds, the organization begins to trust you at that point. But if you're wildly inconsistent, that's not good. It's, you know, being good isn't good enough. You have to be great and to get to the big leagues. There are not many slots open up there, you know, and you really have to fight for them because there are more talented players than there are slots available at the major league level for them to fill. So it, you know, sometimes it comes down to politics. Sometimes it just comes down to being in the right organization at the right time when there's a need at the major league level, injury wise or whatever. But it's, you know, it can be a real crapshoot. When you get to the AAA level, you're doing well, you know, and you want to move up to the major leagues. It's there's a couple other guys competing for that same spot. So it's a real lesson in patience, and it's a real lesson in sometimes things don't always work out in your favor, and you got to just sort of deal with it. You know, you can't let it take you down. You know, you got to gut it out and keep the faith. So it was many lessons I took away from that.
Is that just how you're wired then? Because you do the sports, right? And sports at a you know, a fairly young age. I was reading there was an injury. It didn't go the way that you wanted to. So you transitioned into another highly competitive, you know, hundreds if not thousands of people competing for one slot. You know, how did you transition into that?
Well, that's just because I was stupid and I didn't realize how competitive it was. And I never really saw it as, you know what, the mindset with that wasn't, it was competitive in nature that I knew I was going to outwork everybody, but I got such a late start that was just a given, that's the approach I was going to have to take. But I never really saw it as competitive once I learned, you know, and once you understand the true nature of art and our unique selves. Nobody has ever seen us do it. So you don't have to try to be anything else. You can just be yourself. And if you've got a skill set and a technique and some little bit of natural ability, you know, you can find a place for yourself in the business if you stop trying to be other people and start learning who the heck you are. Because that's the unique part of, that's the original self. That's the original person that needs to show up every day, because there's nobody like you.
Have that highly competitive kind of sports background and then transition into something else that was just, you know, a handful of jobs, thousands of people. I mean, I could ask why. Were you just nuts, or was that just the dream?
No, you know, I went to Europe after baseball. After I retired, I went to Europe for about a year, a little longer than a year, just to kind of figure things out. And I hadn't been outside of a stadium in the summer for a long, long time, and I'd never been to Europe. So I went to Europe, and I kind of got lost and traveled around and met some great people and went to some great places. And I met a couple in Italy, American couple who were both actors. And I went to stay with them once I left Europe. They took me into their acting class, and that's kind of how it started for me. And, you know, I figured this is something that, you know, baseball players have a very short shelf life. And you need to be successful early in order to make a living at it. But with acting, the longer you do it, the better you get. The older you get, the more compelling you can be. And I was bringing a whole lifetime full of experience into it. I was always an avid reader. I love classic literature. I love and I was actually reading screenplays at the time and plays, and I read them in high school. You know, just for school assignments and writing papers on them, and, you know, Death of a Salesman and, you know, some Shakespeare stuff. And, you know, I always had an interest in it from a writing side, never really from an acting side. But it's just something I thought, oh, this is a specific set of skills. I can study and outwork everybody. I always had a work ethic. And the longer I do it, the better I'm going to get at it. So, you know, I didn't really see it as that big a risk. I wasn't really afraid of it because I'd already done something very, very risky and where the odds were stacked against. And I thought, well, You know, I've got a pretty thick skin, and I'm not going to take any of this rejection in these early stages personally.
Yeah.
Because I know it's not personal. So I never really saw it as competitive. It inherently is, but I never saw it that way. I just thought, I'll just bring myself to these roles, and nobody's seen me before, so it has to be original. Hopefully it's interesting. Yeah. That's the risk you take. Because if you're a bore, nobody wants you to play yourself.
Is it true that you went in there, the Luke Danes character, Gilmore Girls, and I mean, it wasn't the first thing that you did, but it was, I mean, it has become kind of the cult following biggest thing, but that was not supposed to be a recurring character.
He was just a guest star in the pilot.
Okay.
So it was not a series regular role. And, you know, we, you know, went up and shot the pilot. I was 10 days up in Toronto, and we knew that it was just sort of a heat check with Lauren to see what's going to work out. Because if she said, "Ew, ick, not him," they could have easily recast the role and reshot the three or four scenes from the pilot. It wouldn't have been terribly expensive for him to do it, and they do it all the time anyway. Mm-hmm. So I got through that test, and they offered 2 episodes, and my manager turned it down, and I almost had a meltdown about that. And they came back with 4 episodes, and she rejected that and said, just go get him a deal, 6-year deal. You know you want him. Make him a series regular, and they did. So
wow.
I had a good manager.
So yeah. 2 episodes yeah. to series regular because the manager flexed.
Yeah. She knew, you know, she believed in me, and she, these productions in these studios, they're very, very hesitant. You know, it's very difficult to get a job, a regular job, a series regular job. And they just weren't there. They didn't want to commit to it. She really knuckled down and told Gavin Pallone, the executive producer, to go to Warner Brothers and get the money for him. You know, you need to lock him down. I got 10 other offers, which was not true.
Wow, that's solid representation. That's good stuff. But look how it turned out. In your wildest imagination, did the cult following, I mean, this is, you did the revival, I guess, in 2016, but it's been off the air for a while. And yet it is still upstairs here. We were talking to people, and they were like, is he coming into the building? Can you get him to come back? Like, there's still that level of cult following. Did you ever imagine that?
No. There's no way to have predicted this. You know, when it hit Netflix, 2016, well, actually, I think it was prior. I think it hit Netflix, 2009? I could be wrong, but I think it hit Netflix before they decided. I think they saw the numbers, how many people were watching, and they never shared the data before, but they kind of share it a little bit now. And they decided to do the episodes. They wanted to make a deal and do more episodes because their engagement was so big on their platform for the 154 episodes, season 1 through 7. But, you know, it's growing. It's not just maintaining its audience base. It's growing it every year. And I do a lot of conventions. Mm-hmm. And I've actually done a convention in Philly, and I might be coming back next year for a convention. But the fans are turning out in big numbers. And Gilmore, I don't know the Gilmore Girls fans initially. The initial crop of Gilmore Girls fans were a very certain part of the social strata. But now it's bled into everybody. There isn't a category of people, ages, wherever they live, whatever their backgrounds are. Everybody watches this show because I meet them at conventions. And they, you know, you think these are not your traditional Gilmore watchers, but they are. Yeah. It's everybody. It's everywhere. It just continues to grow and grow and grow because it was, you know, it's turning out 26 years later, 25 years later, that it's one of the more unique uniquely well-written shows in the history of television. And we all got very lucky for getting picked to do that. So yeah, if you're gonna win one, that was a good one to win. Yeah,
that was it.
Yeah.
Good for you. Good for manager. Good for all the people who saw the vision. We could just because of you talked about the conventions out at Peddler's Village. They like recreated, and you were out there. But we could talk about that forever. That's actually not why you're on tour right now. You're on tour. So how much of a love has music been throughout your career?
It was always the first love, and you know, I remember being a very small child and standing on my parents' coffee table / record player console, and using a hairbrush to sing. I put on concerts for them and sing Beatles songs, and they'd applaud and all that. And so I was in band since I was in third grade, and just love it. I love, you know, the rehearsal part of it, and going out there, the nerves that come from performing. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. And in fifth grade, we played a concert at the talent show. We had a talent show, and we knew two songs. We knew "I'm Not Your Stepping Stone" and "Back in the USSR." And you know, we were just these little fifth grades, skinny little fifth grade guys. But the taller and more developed mentally, physically, sixth grade girls came to the front of the stage, and they were kind of rocking out. And I thought, wow, that's kind of cool. So it's that typical story about, you know, the power of holding the mic and being in a band and all that. And bands, when I was growing up, were very popular. And they're coming back a little bit now. And yeah, so we're out on tour. You know, my booking agent booked us a really nice tour and some really nice venues. We're coming to the City Winery April 28th. We're really excited about it. We're going to go to Boston. We're going to go to New York. We're going to go to Pittsburgh and Chicago and all kinds of places. And, you know, we're just having a good time in rehearsal. And, you know, we're gonna provide a 20-song, 90-minute set that's gonna hopefully keep you on your feet, singing and dancing the whole time.
I mean, that's a 20-song, 90-minute. Like, that's legit. Sounds like such a disrespectful or dismissive term, but that's a like band legit full kind of set. Like, you guys aren't messing around.
Yeah. We actually have 30 songs. We're doing some mashups on 10 of them. So, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be, you know, we're going to hit you again and again and again with great songs. So here's my sales pitch, if you will, to come see the band. Ready?
Let's do it.
Everybody knows about this band Journey, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Neil Schon is the one of the founders and the virtuoso guitar player of Journey. Okay. His son is my lead guitar player.
Okay. So there's some history
Miles Schon is a beast of a guitar player. And I gave him the entire right side of the stage to do his thing, because it is amazing what that kid can do with a guitar. And just a nice kid, and you know, a kid. He's probably 30, but just a humble, nice kid. But man, does he come alive on stage and really rips it up! I have another lead guitar player that backs him up. I'm on guitar. We've got keyboard. We've got a B3. We've got a drummer. Got a virtuoso bass player. I mean, these guys are great. I've known some of them for a long time. Miles is new. The other guitar player, Spencer's new, because I lost a couple guys to big, you know, big tours that, you know, they just pluck these guys away from you, and you can't say no, right? You know, you want them to get that opportunity. So it's an exciting show. It's a real nice set.
It's So this is just, and you know, again, we could talk about everything you do with Gilmore Girls. We talked about, and we'll touch base a little bit more. You can see it behind you, the podcast that you do. This sounds like, I mean, obviously you're taking it seriously, but you just start lighting up when you talk about this. So this is just fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun. It's like at my age having a garage band, and we're just having fun. I've gotten a lot of offers to do acoustic shows and go on tour and do that. And I did that a bunch of years ago, and it was very successful. I had a lot of fun, but the glory is with the full band and to making the noise.
Okay.
And what amplification can do when you have like these elite musicians who know how to weave in and out of stuff and play off each other and listen to each other and react. And it's just an enormous amount of fun. And it just, you know, it takes me back to my days in Haddonfield in my buddy's basement. And we're still good friends. Tommy Poitras and I, a drummer of the band, and he's actually coming to Philly. He lives in South Jersey. He's coming on the 28th, and I think I'm going to have him sit in on a song or two because he's a great drummer, and we've known each other since we were little kids. And it's just going to be a nice full circle moment because Tommy and I, we started the band in his basement third grade. So
how is it? I'm always curious when there are people who are known kind of for one major thing, like people come to see Scott Patterson, but there's somebody is looking for Luke, you know? So what's the response like? Like, do people come there and they're like, well, wait a minute, this ain't the diner. Like, what just happened? Or are people just coming there rocking out?
I think a lot of people, okay, here's what I learned on the tour. They don't know my music. They didn't know my music before we did our coffee house tour in 2017. Mm-hmm. But it sold out pretty quickly. I think they're sort of, they want to see Luke, right? They want to, but I think there's a curiosity in their minds, is Scott like Luke? And, you know, if so, what are the similarities and what are the differences and that kind of thing? Yeah, I think there's just a natural curiosity, and because I'm not deluding myself thinking people really know my music, and that's why they're coming. I know what the draw is, but the thing is with this band, they're going to get a very high level of music, a really, like, you know, the best type of rock and roll, because these are just brilliant guys. They're just brilliant. And I'm pinching myself during rehearsals. I get the chills when we're playing, we're going through the set list and going through the music. And they just sound so damn good. It's like, what am I doing here?
I love how happy this all makes you. All right, we only have a little bit more time. So thank you very much. This is City Winery. You are coming here in April. People can go to City Winery, the website. They can follow you on social. Get the tickets, guys, because they will go very quickly. So I encourage you to go and check it out. I see behind you, I Am All In. That's the podcast, right? So yeah. Kind of revisit episodes of Gilmore Girls, sit down with some of the people. I've read, and I don't know if this is right, some of them you're watching, you know, and like reacting, maybe not for the first time, but reacting in real time.
You mean like watching clips and then reacting to those? No, we don't do a lot of that. I think we've done it a few times. But what it is just a rewatch. So I watch the episodes because I never watch the episodes.
Okay. So then that part is true. You're watching them for the first time.
Yeah. We're on our second go round. So now I've seen them once.
Okay.
You know, most Gilmore fans know these episodes by heart and they know all the dialogue and they know all the storylines. I don't know that stuff. But yeah, the first go round 5 years ago was the first time I'd seen the show.
Wow.
Because I mean, I spent 12, 14, 16 hours a day and to use a crude analogy, making the sausage, I didn't want to go home and continue to eat the sausage.
Right.
So, and I'm sure you know what that means and feels like. So, just I discovered the show just like the fans do. I gave it a shot, and I was amazed. I was amazed at how good it was. I was amazed at how engaged I became when watching the episodes, even though it wasn't really like, you know, fitting my demo. And, you know, it's a lot of talking, and but it's just great dialogue. And, you know, the fans know how great it is. I don't know. I don't have to explain why I love it. It's obvious why people love it. The humor, the drama, the comedy, it's just great. The distinctive characters, the comfort that it gives you. It has real medicinal and therapeutic qualities to it. And I think that's why people have it on a loop at home. They watch it all day, all night, even if the sound isn't on. They go to bed with it. It's quite something. That's a phenomenon.
That's actually a really cool concept. I didn't think about it, and I understand what you're saying, to actually do the show or put together the show versus sitting there and watching it. But it is kind of cool to react in real time. Like, you're reacting with them. You're like, huh? Oh, okay. That was good stuff. So it's I'm All In. It's available all places where podcasts are available. Go ahead and check it out. It's iHeart, right?
iHeart Radio, yeah.
So you can go ahead and check that out. Okay, couple more minutes. So you're on tour. People can get the tickets. You're doing the conventions. You're doing I'm All In. Is it ridiculous to ask what's next?
No, it's not ridiculous at all. I actually have two books coming out. And I have a cookbook that is out right now for pre-sale on Amazon called Scott Patterson's Dishes from the Diner. Okay. So you can go, you go to Amazon and you know, you can pre-buy it. It's not out yet. It'll be out in the fall. And then in fall of 27, polishing up my, and I never thought this was a sentence that was ever leave my mouth. I'm finishing up my memoirs.
Nice.
So that'll be out, fall of 27.
I think so. Be interesting.
And it's really just, and there's, you know, it's just really music. It's the music, it's the conventions, and it's the books. And there may be, I'm working on a new TV show, getting, you know, executive producing it and starring in it. We're in kind of the early stages of that. And then there's another show that I just got off a Zoom meeting about. It's a very, very busy time. And I feel really grateful, really lucky. And it really just, it's all due to this fan response and these great fans that we enjoy as parts of this cast. I do a lot of these conventions all over the country and a couple in Europe. The fans are just, they're lovely. They're so nice. And, I just, you know, I love talking to them. I love getting to hear their stories and getting to know them a little bit. I just really like it. I'd almost rather do that than sit all day and all night on a TV set.
I will tell you, as we wrap up, I will tell you it comes across. I had a fun conversation with our producer, who is obviously part of the following of Gilmore Girls, and she was telling me about you, and she's like, and he's just so nice, and he's so he's personal, and he's approachable, and he likes to sit there and talk to people. And I kind of half joking went, how do you know? Have you ever met him? And she's like, well, no, but I saw the conventions and I saw the show and I follow him on social media. He's just a nice guy. So I will tell you that it comes across even to people who have never met you.
Well, you know, celebrity is a weird, very fickle thing. And it can really mess with your head. And, you know, I put in 7 years of really hard work in professional baseball and I didn't achieve the kind of success that I dreamt of. And I saw how guys who got the opportunities and did well, it affected them. And some guys were really gracious about it, and other guys they forgot who you were.
And I just, you know, I swore to myself I would never become like that. And I would never get, I would never disassociate from the fans because, you know, in my baseball experience, I had some rough days out there on the mound. And the fans would always support you, no matter if you were going bad or going good. They were there for you. And I'll never forget a kid, little Ricky. He would come to every home game in Columbus, Ohio. He was, I don't know, 7, 8 years old. He was in a wheelchair for life. And if he, you know, if he came out to every game, rain or shine, you know, I could be grateful for that. And I could appreciate that fact. And, you know, I learned how to deal with fans and treat fans as an athlete. And I was just always really grateful that they came out and supported me, even on the days when I stunk. You know, I can't tell you how many times that kid leaned forward and said, "Hey, I believe in you. Hang in there, man. You're awesome." When I wasn't feeling too good about myself. So I love them. And I think it's about them. I place them above any celebrity. I place them above myself. I don't see them as, you know, well, I mean, there's something going around in the media now about how a certain star is engaging with fans. I don't know what that feels like. I don't know what that means. I don't know why anybody would treat a fan that way. Because I've been a fan too, and I've been disappointed by people, and I've been, you know, elated by people that give me the time of day, right? So it's like, who do you want to be?
It's always and better. When you find out that the people are good.
If you're walking around thinking you're somebody, and let me tell you something, I'm from South Jersey, and if you get a big head in South Jersey, you get knocked down real fast.
Philly as well. Okay. They will remind you.
Oh, they'll remind you. Don't get too big, man, because and it's just like, it's just where I'm from.
Yeah.
So thank you, Philadelphia. Thank you, South Jersey, for, you know, for raising me up the right way, you know. And, you know, so I feel I kind of owe it to them, right? Their dedication, I owe them the respect. So it just comes down to respect. So, you know, it's easy. It's natural.
The closing comment on the Pulse with everybody, the theme of the show is use your voice for good. So I end every show asking that same question. When you hear the phrase, use your voice for good, what does that mean to you?
You know, just support the people that support you and just be a friend, you know, just be your natural self and lend a hand. You know, it doesn't matter what it is, at what level it is. It could be one person. It could be a lot of people. You know, I grew up in a very densely populated area, and you had to be a certain way, and you couldn't be an idiot. You get smacked out. You know, but there's also the side of that where, you know, I'll give you the shirt off my back if you're my friend, you know. Yeah. And loyalty is a big deal. So, you know, I think that all plays into doing good. It's like trying to be a better person, you know, being available to listen to your friends, your family, your loved ones, you know, every once in a while a stranger. So, you know, we're all just, you know, we all go through the same, we all have the same problems. We all have the same issues. You know, I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth. I had to struggle for everything I had, work hard and, you know, and really, you know, take a massive gamble on success. You know, for a lot of people, it doesn't work out. I happened to get lucky. I was in there finally at 41 years old in the right place at the right time when Gilmore happened. So I just feel a lot of gratitude for it. And it's humbled me. It actually has really humbled me because it's exceeded my dreams in a certain sense. So it's a very humbling experience, you know. Yeah. And I'm just glad that I came from the place that I came from, because I'm never going to allow myself to treat anybody badly that shows me respect in that way. So, yeah.
I think that's the mic drop moment. Scott Patterson in town and City Winery coming up in April. Make sure you come and check out the band, also the podcast, the episodes of Gilmore Girls, a couple of books coming out. We're waiting for updates on this new show. So a little bit of everything. But thank you so much. We appreciate you taking this much time.
All right, Bill. Appreciate it. And if you want another avenue to get tickets for the show, the band, it's go to please.co, please.co. And you can get pre-show, post-show, meet and greets and tickets and all that stuff. Oh, nice. So I hope to see you out there.
Please.co. Guys, thanks so much for listening to The Pulse with Bill Anderson podcast today with actor, musician, we now know former professional baseball player, author, you name it, Scott Patterson, local guy also, and somebody with a really inspiring story. People may know him from his acting or perhaps from his music, but what inspired me the most was hearing his determination, dedication, and path to success. He said that he didn't reach until after his 40th birthday. So for all of the people sitting there thinking time has passed you by, it's time to not follow your dreams anymore. He kept pursuing them and it turned out pretty well. I hope it was inspiring to you. It was to me. If you would like notifications every time a new episode comes out every week, hit like, follow, subscribe. Whatever shows up on your screen, you'll get that notification every week for the next episode of The Pulse. You can download the Fox Local app. All of our episodes are right there on demand at your fingertips. And you can always hit me up on social media at Bill A. Fox 29. Thank you as always for listening. And I leave you today as I always do, reminding you whenever you can, use your voice for good and have a good one.